KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I was honest with everybody throughout the recruiting process, honest with them all 4 years. Every player that ever played for me, they knew why they started, why they were playing, and they knew why they weren't. There was never any secrets. There was never any player going back to his dorm and saying, man, I don't understand why I'm not getting on the field. They all knew. They knew what the expectations were.
And our guest this week is Jeff Haynes. He recently retired after spending more than three decades at Division III Stockton University down in Galloway, New Jersey. Had a long, really successful stretch as the head soccer coach. He retired as an associate director of athletics and recreation. Lots to talk about. And Jeff, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So first of all, a long storied career at Stockton. Why was this the right time to hang it up?
That's a great question. I think it became obvious once we started hosting for the Club World Cup in 2025 last summer, and then preparing for this summer's World Cup. I put in a lot of work in the athletic department, both from a director standpoint and then also putting a lot of time and effort and work into the Club World Cup and the World Cup. I figured, okay, this is enough. I think this is a pretty good time to end my career at Stockton on a high note, and had a great experience hosting CR Flamengo in 2025 for the Club World Cup and this year with Haiti for the World Cup as a team-based camps at Stockton.
As we were talking before we started recording, this is new territory for you. You've only been out the door a little bit. Does it seem real, or does it just kind of for now feel like you're on vacation?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think, when I left on July the 1st at 12:30, I called my wife and she's like, how do you feel? Are you excited? Are you depressed? Or, are you pumped? Do you have tears in your eyes? And I'm like, I don't really have any feelings right now. I mean, I've spent the bulk of my career at Stockton, and Stockton was great to me and for me and great for my career. And hopefully I performed just as well for them. But yeah, it's really not real, to be honest with you. We went on vacation right after July the 1st and came back and have been pretty busy doing all kinds of things like this. So I think as the weeks go by, it'll sink in a little bit more and more each day.
You mentioned the World Cup and last year the Club World Cup, and that took a lot of your attention given your soccer expertise. But kind of putting that aside, in your final years as associate director of athletics and recreation, like what was your day-to-day? What was your main focus? Because I know they kind of can cleave those positions up where everybody has certain things they really focus on.
Yeah, I was responsible for a lot of different things and wore many different hats at the university. Primary responsibilities were supervising men's basketball, women's volleyball, women's soccer, and women's lacrosse. I also oversaw all of the club sports programs and all of the head coaches and assistant coaches. And I was also responsible for the scheduling of our athletic facilities. So any of our indoor spaces, any of our outdoor spaces, scheduling that for practices, tournaments, graduations, blood drives, et cetera, and then also responsible for any of the contracts that would be involved with any outside groups like the Special Olympics or AAU basketball. And finally, a big part of my job was also being the conduit between athletics and plant operations to make sure all of our facilities were up to par, any repairs, any scheduled maintenance, and work orders for all of our intercollegiate games.
Given that experience, your long time as the head soccer coach on the men's side, and just more than three decades at the same institution, was there really anything in athletics that you weren't aware of or didn't have a working knowledge of just at every level? You might not have been an expert. You might not have been like the final person someone wanted to go to, but for the most part, would you be able to direct anyone in any direction of if they had a question about the athletics department at Stockton and get them the right answer?
Yeah, I think, G. Larry James, our late athletic director who hired me, gave me my first head coaching job, he always tried to instill in me that institutional knowledge is something that is so important to have in athletics. So I was involved in just about everything and anything that went on in athletics from 1995 all the way up until July the 1st. So I think if someone had a question in athletics, somebody had an issue or didn't know where something was or didn't know how we could handle a certain situation, I was kind of the go-to guy, along with John Heck, who was there for 34 years. And he just retired a year ago this June. So the school's losing a lot in regards to that institutional knowledge, which is going to be difficult for them to replace. Everybody's replaceable. I'll be replaced, no problem. But the institutional knowledge is something that I think I had a great deal of when I left a few weeks ago.
At what point during your 31 years, or was there a point where you decided, hey, you know what? This is where I'm going to set my shingle up for the long term. I don't think anybody, you know, when you get that first job there, I don't know that anybody's necessarily thinking that, but I'm assuming at a certain point you kind of thought, you know what? I'm comfortable. I'm happy. They treat me right. I'm good at this. Was there that moment where you had that discussion with yourself that Stockton's going to be my home one way or another?
Yeah, I think when I first came to Stockton, that was not my goal to stay there for 31 years. I was looking to come in, do well on the coaching side, win a lot of games, win as many games as I could possibly win, and then move on and go to bigger soccer programs, bigger schools, go to Division I. I did have some opportunities to move on at the Division I level as a head coach or associate head coach. But after we won the national championship in 2001, the university and Dr. Kesselman came to me and said, all right, look, what do we need to do to keep you at Stockton? And you know, I said, well, you're going to have to pay me like a Division I coach. And if you can kind of do that, then I'll make a commitment to Stockton and I'll stay. And the school came back to me and they gave me some promotions and I kept moving along and made a commitment, you know, after 2001, I'm going to set up camp here and stay. I made my commitment to the school and the university and I don't regret my decision at all.
So you mentioned winning that national championship and you had that incredible run as the men's soccer coach. Take me back. You grew up in South Jersey. You went to Pittman. When did soccer become a passion for you? Was that something you were playing as a young kid, or were you doing all different sports and eventually gravitated to soccer? Kind of what's the backstory there?
Yeah, so funny story. I started out, gosh, I don't know how old it was, 6, maybe 7 years old. I tried out for football, and I was small and thin. And our local football coaches in Pittman said, I don't think this is going to be the sport for you. So I was pretty disappointed as a young kid. All my close friends at that time were playing football. So I moved on to soccer. And I was pretty good at it. I was fast and pretty athletic. So I stuck with it. And I never looked back. I played in college and had a very good high school career. Played in college, had a great experience in college, particularly at Lock Haven University, and had a great coaching staff there. And when I graduated from college, it never really crossed my mind to be a college soccer coach. I graduated and I came home, and my parents were really thrilled that I didn't really have any idea what I wanted to do with my life after graduating from school. So a funny story was that I got hired as a community recreation and wellness director in South Jersey, and it was a great job right out of college, and I did enjoy it, but it wasn't something I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And there's a woman that came in every day and into our fitness center, and she kept asking me, what do you want to do in life? What do you want to do? And I wasn't really sure. And so she goes, you got to meet with my my best friend. She's a psychologist. And I said, oh, I don't know if I need to meet with a psychologist. She's like, no, you need to. You need to. And this went on for months and months and months. And I finally broke down and said, all right, I'll meet with your friend. And I met with her. And I went to her office and she had a notepad. And she goes, I'm going to change your life in 5 minutes. I said, okay. And she goes, what do you know the most about? And I said, probably soccer. So she writes it down. She goes, what else? Well, probably playing soccer. So she goes, all right, if you could have any job in the world, what would it be within reason? You can't be the point guard for the Chicago Bulls. But I said, well, probably be a college soccer coach. And she writes it down and she's like, okay, where? I said, be a full-time college soccer coach at Duke. And she goes, all right, what are the top three things you need to do in order to get to Duke to become a head coach? And I said, well, I got to go back to school and, you know, work on a master's degree. And she writes it down. I said, I have to become an assistant coach with somebody. She writes it down and I said, I got to go get my coaching licenses. She writes it down. She rips a piece of paper off. She slides it across the desk. She goes, get started on your life. And I thought about it. So that kind of got the ball rolling there. I went to SUNY Binghamton and got my coaching licenses. I enrolled in some courses at Virginia Commonwealth, and I became an assistant coach at Gloucester County College, which is now the Rowan College of South Jersey. And that's how I really got my career started. It really didn't cross my mind to be a college soccer coach. So, yeah, so this woman got me started, and I never looked back from that point. And it kind of made sense. You know, what am I doing here at this place? Why don't I move on and get into coaching?
She slides that paper across. Mm-hmm. Like, how long did you have a – holy crap, she's right. Were you smacked in the face with kind of how – simple, the answer was almost right in front of you, but you needed somebody to crystallize it for you?
Yeah, I guess. And it was weird because she's like, I'm going to call you in the next 3 to 4 weeks and see where you are in this process. And I'm like, wow. So I had to like get moving on this. And I made progress towards it. And she called me 6 months later, and I was already got the position at Gloucester County College with a longtime friend, Dave Jones from Pittman. And I moved on to the College of New Jersey, and we were able to go to the Final Four there in 1994 when I was the assistant coach there. And we kept in touch for a while. We've lost touch here lately. But yeah, she kind of got my story going for me.
What position did you play as a player?
So in high school, I was a forward. In college, I kind of moved on to more of a defensive role. Although I was kind of like a utility guy, I kind of got moved around. We had a lot of injuries. I was injured a lot in college.
And you went to Lock Haven, right?
I went to Lock Haven. And I can't say enough about my teammates and the coaches at Lock Haven. They really, really, really opened up my eyes to the game of soccer. Coming from a small little school, Group 1 school in Pittman, that wasn't really known for soccer and producing great soccer players. I had a lot to learn when I left Pittman, and I think I figured a few things out along the way.
When you start coaching as an assistant, did it click with you right away? Like, were you like, oh yeah, this is where I need to be? Or was there an adjustment period where you're like, ah, I like this, but I don't know if I can do this? And, you know, was there a back and forth, or was it just a click right away?
No, it was instant. I mean, I knew once I started coaching, I loved it. I loved recruiting. I loved the competition. I loved the camaraderie with the players and coaches. I loved the challenge. And I think that, you know, the programs I started out with, that we were kind of the underdogs, and you know, it was a challenge to try and take each of the programs to a higher level. And yeah, it was great. I mean, I loved it. And I think being a college assistant for 7 years with you know, a few different coaches kind of let me mold my own style, because each of the coaches I work for, Coach Long at Lock Haven and Dave Jones at Gloucester County College and Rick Dell at Trenton State, now the College of New Jersey, now Tim Lenihan at Stockton, all of those coaches were completely different. And I took a little bit of piece of all of those coaches and kind of mold, you know, my coaching philosophy and style out of all of those coaches, and came up with my own philosophy, and I think we were able to win a lot of games together.
What was the toughest lesson you had to learn as a coach?
Boy, that some of the players aren't able to make the transition from high school club to the college level, number one. Number two, that no matter how hard I coach and how much I want them to improve and they want to improve themselves, there's a limit to each player and there's a ceiling. And I felt that I just kept trying to get more and more out of every single player, and sometimes they've hit their ceiling. And so that was tough for me. I always felt that every player that I coached and brought in, I felt that there was another level. I could get them further and further and further along. But each player has their ceiling.
So you mentioned the different stops, and you have several years as an assistant. At what point along that road do you start to think, I think I'm ready to be a head coach? I'm sure it's always kind of in the ether as you're coaching, but I'm sure there's also got to be a point where you look in the mirror and go, I think I'm ready. Do you have a specific point you remember that?
I think probably after my first or second year at Stockton. I think particularly in soccer, I think there's a lot of players, there's a lot of coaches, assistant coaches that think that they're ready to be a head coach. And I think what helped me was that I was able to be an assistant for 7 years with 4 different head coaches. And then once I got to Stockton, I felt I was ready. I think Tim Linehan felt I was ready to take over as the head coach when he moved on to Lafayette. And he pushed hard for me to get the job. So I think like that second year at Stockton, when we won the conference championship for the first time at Stockton in 1996, and I was pretty excited. And, you know, when I took over as the head coach, I was confident. I was ready to go. I wasn't nervous at my first game or second game. And, you know, everybody said, you know, were you nervous in a national championship game? And I wasn't. I wasn't nervous. I was a confident coach, I think, because I had a lot of experience as a player and as an assistant. So I hit the ground running from day one, and I never looked back.
When you go from assistant at Stockton to taking over at head coach, and I think it was 98 you took over as the head
coach.
I'm sure you have players on the roster that knew you as an assistant, and then you're the guy in charge. And the dynamic, I think a lot of times an assistant with the players and the head coach with the players is different. And it can be tricky sometimes when you make that step over because, you know, power has shifted and assistant coaches a lot of times are buffers, they're sounding boards, whereas the head coach a lot of times is more the we're doing it this way and this is how it's worked. Did that present any challenges for you that first year when your role changed?
No, it really didn't. A funny story, when I was working for Tim Linehan as his assistant at Stockton, he said, okay, this is how it's going to work. You're going to be the good guy. I'm going to be the bad guy. So, and you get close to the players and, you know, you let me know what's going on and I'll be the bad guy, you be the good guy. I said, okay, yeah, no problem, whatever you want to do. So it was one of the first practices and I got a little irritated with the team and I kind of laid into the team a little bit and I got on them. And then after practice, Tim goes, okay, here's what's going to change. You're going to be the tough guy and I'm going to be the nice guy and the good guy. And I said, why? He goes, I think you're better at that. So I think that Tim allowing me to be almost like a co-coach with him, I really respected him as a coach and more importantly as a person. He gave me a lot of leeway, a lot of say in the program, and I appreciate that and still to this day. And I think we worked well together. So I think I had a dynamic with the team. It was maybe a little bit different than a lot of assistant coaches out there. I didn't get real close to the players, you know, on a personal level. I kept it business and so did Tim, you know, so it was a pretty easy transition going from the assistant coach to a head coach because Tim allowed me to have some power and some say with the program. So the players knew that I was there to win games. I was brought there to help Tim win games. And, you know, we had never beaten Rowan in 19 years. So that was kind of the goal of Stockton when I first got there, that all the players were like, hey, we got to beat Rowan. We've got to beat Rowan. We got to beat Rowan. We've never beaten Rowan. I'm like, I'm here to beat everybody. I'm not here just to beat Rowan. And that first year that I arrived at Stockton, we did beat Rowan. And so that was a big, big day for the men's soccer program at Stockton. And so, yeah, it was a pretty smooth transition, and I really enjoyed my time with Tim as an assistant. I thought that he really molded me into the coach that I was there.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Jeff Haynes coming up in just a few moments. But right now, I want to tell you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio Studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles. And finally, take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic and HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Books KBB.com best value brand. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Jeff Haynes, who just retired after 31 years with Stockton University as a coach and administrator. When you take over as head coach, did anything surprise you about the role? Now, obviously, you had spent a couple years at Stockton, so you had seen up close the dynamics of what made the program work, and you had been an assistant at other places, so... But I'm guessing, and talking to other people, when you're the guy in the chair, something comes along that you didn't realize was in your purview or was something you hadn't been exposed to. Was there anything like that when you first started?
I mean, the only thing I can really think of is that I really wanted to take the program to new heights and I wanted to win the national championship. That was my goal. And in order to do that, I needed some buy-in with the university. I needed buy-in with athletics and buy-in with admissions. And so the school kind of rallied around the soccer program. And then in my second year, we went to the Final Four in 1999. And that was kind of the turning point, I think, with not just the soccer program at Stockton, but Stockton Athletics as a whole, where they're like, wow, we can do this. We can win games here. We can get to Final Fours. And you know, our men's basketball team had been to the Final Four before, and so did the women's soccer team in 1995. But you know, we won the conference, and we got to the Final Four, and I was asking for a lot of things, more money, more resources, and really getting connected in with the college. So, yeah, I think 1999 and just being able to sell my philosophy to the whole university and to get athletics to buy into my story.
You talked about you were confident and you felt ready when you're a head coach. But I think you go to the NCAA tournament your first year. You mentioned the Final Four that second year, and you win the NJAC. You know, that's a lot of success for a young coach, a first-time head coach. Did that surprise you at all, or did it just make sense? Like, no, this is – we've put the work in. This is my vision, and this is how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a really good recruiting class, you know, my first year, my second year, my third year. I mean, look, I've said it all along. I didn't score one goal. I didn't make one save. I kind of put the pieces in place. I let the players play. I kind of had a philosophy, you know, when you're on the field, you know, this situation arises, you do this. So there's about 15 points that every player had to really buy into. And when they're on the field, if you don't do those 15 things, then you're going to come off. And I had buy-in from the players, and we were able to have success early on. So everybody was like, okay, this guy must know what he's doing. So, yeah, we had some pretty good early success. And it's hard to sustain it for year after year after year after year. I mean, we have some great coaches in the New Jersey Athletic Conference. And, you know, every program in the New Jersey Athletic Conference from a soccer standpoint has been to at least the second round of the NCAA tournament. Four schools have won the national championship, four different schools, and five have been to the finals. So it's a tough conference. And I think the conference, you know, recently over the last, you know, 10, 15 years has dropped off a little bit nationwide, but it's still a great conference.
You mentioned Final Four in 99, national championship in 2001, and you were really good for every year. You guys are always in the mix. Like, did the 2001 team, that national championship team, prior to the season, was there a feeling that this group's ceiling is a little higher, or was it just right in line of, we are very good, it's going to depend on how healthy we are and maybe matchups, but this group has a chance, just like I felt all these groups have had a chance?
Yeah, a little side note about the 2001 season. Tim Lenihan got the coaching job at Northwestern in the Big Ten, and I was going with him as the associate head coach. And I said, well, look, I go, can I come in November or December? Because I said, I have a team that I think I could win a national championship with. And I said, I've put a lot of time in, and I can't just turn the reins over to somebody else and have all the success. Because I said, I think we're good enough where we could win the whole thing. So he said, yeah, let's do it. Do your thing. And he was holding the position open for me. And we, in fact, went 25-1-1 and won the national championship. And we still hold the record today for the wins in a season in all divisions, Division I, Division II, and Division III for wins in a season with 25. So once we won the national championship in preseason camp of that year, my dad passed away. I met my current wife. So the school gave me a raise, and I'm like, I can't make the move. I'm supposed to stay at Stockton. And Tim's like, this is where you're supposed to be. You need to stay at Stockton. So I'm still grateful for Tim for that, you know, holding that position for me. It worked out for Tim. He had a great run at Northwestern. He had some great assistant coaches that took over. So he certainly didn't need me. But yeah, so that was the turning point there for me to stay. But yeah, I knew I had a good team. I knew I did.
25-1-1. I'm just curious because so many coaches, the losses stick with them more than the victories. Do you remember who beat you?
Oh, yeah. So we lost at Rowan, and we lost on a goal kick. A player flicked the ball on, and he went in on a breakaway, and we played a great game. And I think that was the fifth game of the year, I believe. My memory's not as great as Tim's, but I believe we've started the year 4-1, and our loss was to Rowan. And we didn't lose another game the rest of the way through. And we beat Rowan in the conference tournament, and we beat him in the NCAA tournament. So we beat Rowan twice that year. And then we also beat the national runners-up, the University of Redlands. We beat them twice as well. So we beat them the first game of the year, and we beat them in the national championship game. So the University of Redlands had two losses all year, and they were both to Stockton.
So as you mentioned, you play them in the national championship game. Take me back to, you guys are putting this run together. You feel like you've got a team that can win it all. Like, leading up to that game against Redlands, what were the vibes like? Like, how clear is the pregame to you, or is it all kind of a blur?
No, I mean, we were confident. The whole team was confident. I mean, look, we won a lot of games, and we had 16 shutouts. Leading into the national championship game, we scored 85 goals, which is unheard of. And a local coach, George Nazario from the College of New Jersey, came into the locker room, who was acting as an NCAA rep for the Final Four. And he gave me his ring in the locker room, or on the way, excuse me, to the locker room from the NCAA meeting pregame. And he goes, here's my ring. Take a look at it. This is what your school will purchase for you if you win the national championship. And I'm looking at him, He goes, no, keep it. Keep it for good luck. And I gave it back to him, said, I'm going to get my own. So we hugged it out, and he went to the sideline. I went to my team after that, and we were able to win the national championship. So I thought that was pretty cool. But that was as the walk from the NCAA meeting pregame. We went across Messiah's covered bridge and went into our locker room and spoke with the team and showed the team his ring. And then I gave it back to George. It was a pretty cool gesture, and the team kind of got fired up and got emotional for that game. And I thought we played great in the national championship game.
And you won 3-2?
We did. We started out the season. We gave up an early goal the first game of the year to the Redlands, and we battled back and won that game 3-1 and went through the whole season. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that Redlands team, that's the best team I've seen all year long. Every game that went by, I'm like, man, we've really beat a great team here. And I was nervous because we did not videotape that game, the first game. My dad had just passed away in August during preseason camp. The team went out to Colorado for the opening tournament, and I met the team out there. So we were a little unprepared for that game in regards to organization. I didn't videotape the game. And then here we go. We get to the national championship game, and I know that they videoed the game, and they had a full video of our game, and I did not have one of them. And I said, they're going to play completely different. They have to. And we started the game. They played exactly the same way they played against us in the first game. They were very similar to our system at Stockton. And I'm like, this is going to be a problem for them because we're better at it. And we scored 6 goals in 2 games against the national runners-up and beat them 2-0. So they probably should have made a change here or there. But yeah, we were pretty confident going into that game.
That being said, do you remember the moment when you allowed yourself to, we're going to win this. We're going to win this game. Like, do you remember that moment?
Well, it was when the final whistle blew. We scored early in the game, first 3 minutes, 40 seconds into the championship game. We go up 1-0, and everybody was going crazy. We gave up a goal, tied 1-1, and we go up 2-1, and they tied it 2-2. And we scored the third goal halfway through the second half on a great header by Mike McElernan, local South Jersey player from Ocean City. And I'll say this, for the last 10 minutes of the game, we were hanging on. They were attacking with, 10 players.
How slow was that clock going?
Oh, I kept staring at the clock. I'm like, tick, 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 please tick. And I just kept looking at the clock like every 10 seconds. I'm like, oh my gosh, let's go. You know, we took our forwards off and our attacking players off and put all defensive players in. They're our best players in the air. We're all on the field. We didn't need any more goals. We just needed to be able to handle services in the box and restarts, and we hung on. And so basically, honestly, till that final whistle blew, I wasn't sure if we were going to hang on and win it.
What's the celebration like in the next 24 hours after that, the trip home? Because I'm a Messiah, you probably bust home, I would imagine, after all the rigmarole, right?
We spent the night in Grantham, PA at the hotel, and we drove back the next morning. You know, the players were fired up. I mean, the school was fired up and pumped. This is uncharted territory for Stockton. We weren't really sure what was going to happen, what was going to, you know, happen at the school. But the school really celebrated the soccer program throughout the year, which was great, at basketball games and at board meetings. And we went to the Capitol. Frank Lobiondo was terrific and took us to the Capitol building and had lunch, and we got pictures, you know. So it was great. We had a great experience. And it wasn't just that weekend or that Monday when we came back. I mean, the school celebrated that team all year long during the academic year. So it was a lot of fun.
You had had success, obviously, we talked about it, and you went to that Final Four, but a national championship is different. Obviously, things changed for you. You mentioned the school came to you and said, how can we keep you? But for the program, how did life change after you win that national championship? Are you getting calls that you would not get before from a scheduling standpoint? Are you getting into living rooms from a recruiting standpoint that maybe you weren't getting before? Was it tangible how the program was viewed after that, even though you had been successful at a high level? A national championship elevates it to an elite part of the stratosphere.
You know, what was weird is, believe it or not, the recruiting didn't get a lot easier. It kind of was the same. I thought recruiting would get a little bit easier. I think it got a little tougher than I thought. I think players were a little nervous to come to Stockton, that they felt that maybe they weren't good enough, even though I thought they were good enough. So I think we lost some players due to that, that we had a lot of good returning players coming back. So they were nervous about their playing time, which that was a little surprising to me. I think that the scheduling surprised me a little bit, that no one wanted to play us. So I was calling 40 and 50 schools to get them on our schedule, and they didn't want to play us. And I was surprised about that. So it became a little bit more difficult after we won it, believe it or not. I just couldn't get games. And I was the kind of coach that I wanted to play 20 games. You're allowed to play 20 regular season games, including scrimmages, and I didn't play any scrimmages. I felt that we're ready to play games based upon our training and our practices. I didn't need to risk injuries and tire our legs out with scrimmages during preseason camp, and let's go play 20 games. So it was very difficult for me to get a full schedule every year. I was able to do it, but I wasn't getting calls to play them. I would have had to beg and borrow and steal and give some guarantees to some smaller programs for them to play us.
And reading up on that, we talk about the celebration. I want to go back to that. You had the team cut the net. Like, we're familiar with when teams win a national championship in basketball or any kind of a championship, but they cut the nets down. But you actually had them cut the soccer net to take pieces of it as souvenirs. Was that on the spot? Was that something you had done at some point as a player or an assistant, or was that just something you thought was a great way to celebrate this with the team?
That was my goal, was to win a national championship and cut the net down where everybody could get a piece of the net. That was always my goal in life, my number one goal. And to my knowledge, no one was cutting the nets down in soccer. I never saw it before. I don't know of any other program, national team. I never knew of any other team to cut the net down before. And at Messiah, I had a blank check that I gave to my athletic director in the pregame. And I said, if we win this game, I want to buy the nets off of Messiah and we're going to cut the nets down. And he's like, okay. And he spoke with their athletic director, and the athletic director said that the nets aren't for sale and they cannot cut the nets down. I'm like, really? And so my AD came to me at halftime and said, look, if you guys win, you can't cut the nets down. Their AD said, the nets are not for sale. And I'm like, I'm going to pay for brand new nets. Like, you got to get this done for me. So the game was over. We're celebrating. And my AD, Lonnie Folks, came up to me and He said the AD reconsidered and he said, you can cut the nets down and here's your check. You don't have to pay for them. So I put the check back in my pocket. We got our athletic trainer to give me the scissors and we went, we cut the nets down. And what was great is that everybody has a piece of the net where we scored the game-winning goal by Mike McElhern. And you know, my two nephews have a piece of the net. We have professors that have a piece of the net. We have alumni that have a piece, you know, of the net. So everybody was allowed to get a little piece of that national championship. And it's one of the greatest things. And what's wild is that now teams have been doing that in college and around the world where they're cutting the nets down. And they just did it in this last World Cup. So it's pretty cool.
Where did the idea come to you, or did it just make sense that, well, they cut nets in basketball. We use a net, so let's cut it down.
Yeah, I was surprised. I'm like, why is nobody doing this? They do it in basketball. And I guess just because of the cost of the nets are a lot different, but still, let's cut them down. And I thought it'd be cool. And we have some great photos of all of our players and coaches cutting the nets down and have them in a big book at home that, you know, be able to cherish forever. So yeah, it's great.
We need to take another break. More with Jeff Haynes coming up, but right now I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio Studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles, and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic and HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand. Now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Jeff Haynes.
Now, the next year, you guys were very good. You weren't able to repeat, if you can. But I'm just curious, when you come to camp the next year, winning a national championship, it is such a steep mountain to climb. How difficult is it mentally to come back and have to start at ground zero again? Is that a difficult, not just for you, for the players, for everyone, to know what goes into it and then to be back at the beginning once again?
It was extremely hard because we lost 9 seniors from that national championship team. So we had a good amount of players back, you know, from that national championship team. And we started out 3-3, and it was pretty difficult start for us. We went down to Atlanta and played Emory, and drawing a blank who the other school we played down there was, but we had a tough start. And then after that, we went on a run and we ended up winning 18 games the year after we won the national championship. And to be honest with you, that 2002 season was probably my best coaching season ever at the school. We lost a lot of leadership. We lost a lot of firepower. And we had to change completely the way we played. I wasn't prepared in 2002 for the way other teams were going to play us. So all the teams sat back on us and packed it in and played a low block of players in their own half of the field. And so we had to really change the way we played. And it took us a few games to get going. So we actually played a 4-3-3 that year because so many teams just sat back on us and it was made it difficult for us to score goals. So they were scared to play us, but we lost 9 seniors that year. So we had a completely, I wouldn't say a completely different team, but it was a different team for sure. Every year is different.
All the success you had as a coach, why do you think you were so good? I mean, obviously getting the right players, but there had to be something about what you brought to the table, because your win-loss record for your career is like you're 150 games over 500. Maybe I think it's even more. But so why were you so good as a head coach?
I feel that I always wanted to learn from as many different people and from the best coaches I can possibly get information from. You know, we hosted, you know, Northwestern at Stockton. We hosted Lafayette at Stockton. We hosted St. John's at Stockton. So I would tap everybody's brain, ask them questions, call around the country, talk to Dr. Dave Mazur about his philosophy. Bob Riasso with Rutgers, we hosted them at Stockton. So I wasn't the type of coach that thought I knew it all and knew everything. I wanted my players to think that I did know everything, because I wanted them to have confidence in me. But I went to all these other coaches and I tried to learn as much as I possibly could learn from all these different coaches. And, you know, why does Dave Mazur and St. John's play this way? Why does, you know, this coach play this way? Why did Bob Riasso play this way? Why did, you know, all the great coaches around the country, you know, when went through my coaching courses and coaching academies with, you know, Mike Berticelli when he was at Notre Dame and Shellis Heineman when he was head coach at SMU. So I really, and Barry Gorman at Penn State, I tapped into those guys' brains and I really wanted to learn as much as I could possibly learn and just mold that into my own philosophy. So I think a lot of the young coaches today, they come out and they think they know everything. They watch some YouTube videos. They watch a lot of games on TV and they automatically think that they have all of the information they need to be successful. And I never thought that. I just wanted to learn from the best coaches and around the country. And I used all of their information to the best of my knowledge.
So you coach from – you're the head coach at Stockton, 98 to 2014. 7 NCAA tournaments. You win the NJAC 4 times. Mentioned Final Four, national championship. Why did you decide to step away from coaching after 2014? Was that something where you kind of made the decision ahead of time that, hey, I think the tank's running a little dry and maybe like to step away? Or was it something where you just woke up one day and you said, I think I'm done doing this? The decision to not coach anymore, what went into it?
So before I even became a head coach, I knew I was not going to be a head coach for 30 years, 35 years. There's just no way. I knew that before I even started. That I needed to move into administration one day. I told my bosses, I said, look, I'm not going to do this for 30 years. So keep me in mind when something becomes available. You know, I guess I said that in 2003, maybe 2005. We went to the Elite Eight in 2004, which was a great year for us too. But I knew I didn't want to be a coach for 30 years. I'm a little different than I think a lot of coaches. A lot of coaches like the idea of being a head coach more so than coaching. Like I loved practices. I loved getting out there and coaching. I liked the competition. I liked playing a hard schedule. And we did. We always played a difficult schedule. And every goal that went in for us, you know, was emotional. And every goal that went in the back of our own net was emotional. I mean, it was stressful. You know, I took every pass, you know, every header, every goal kick, every punt, every practice. I gave it my 100% effort every single day that I was a head coach. And I knew I just couldn't sustain that. There are a lot of programs out there and at every level that, you know, they only have, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 tough games a year. And I had a lot of tough games. We always played a tough schedule. And the conference was at an all-time high. So there was never a day off where I could sit back and, man, we're going to beat these guys. You know, these guys aren't any good. So I just knew it wasn't going to be a 30-year grind for me. I couldn't do it. So I gave everything I could for 17 years as a head coach. I put a lot of emotion and work into it as an assistant too. So for 24 years, I think I gave it my all, and it was time for me to move on. And when Stockton came to me with this, you know, offer in this position to get out of coaching, I thought about it for a little while, and I wanted to make sure I was making the right decision. I knew it wasn't the perfect time for me to do it, but if I didn't do it then, I probably would regret it because then I would be coaching, and I didn't really want to be coaching anymore. So I don't regret my decision getting out when I did. So
I'm curious, and I ask this not knowing anything about the transition, but when you've had high level success with a program like that and you're not the coach anymore, but you're still at the place and let's say you're watching practice, you're watching games and they're doing things not better, worse, but different. How hard is it to not express your opinion? Because that can be a difficult road to travel depending upon who takes over the dynamic and stuff like that. Was that challenging at all?
It was. My assistant, Greg Rutler, took over for me, and he was a player on our national championship team as an All-American and captain. He took over, and it was extremely difficult for me to sit on the sidelines there and watch and not have a voice and watch them do things differently. I wanted to jump up and yell something out to the players of the team, and obviously I couldn't and I never did. But yeah, it was very difficult sitting there watching them. I wanted to help. I felt like I could help the team and help the program. And I have no say anymore. So it's his team, it's his program. But yeah, it was very, very, very difficult for me not to jump in and voice my opinion. And so yeah, that was the toughest part.
How long did it take before you kind of came to peace with that, and maybe that instinct wasn't there quite as much?
I think it's still there. Yeah, I haven't said anything for whatever, 11 years, whatever it is. And even when I go back this fall and watch the games, I'll be in the stands. It'll be a little easier. I might be able to say a couple things. But yeah, it's his team. It's his program. I'm done. I'm out. And, you know, I had my day, and it's on them now.
I'm curious. I know no regrets about not taking, you know, making the move to Northwestern when you had a chance and going Division I. But I think there's a difference between regrets and moments of what if, where I wonder if this would have translated. How often, if at all, did you have that? And do you still have moments of that if you did?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not saying I would have gone to Division I and won a national championship or anything like that. But there's a lot of coaches at Division I that had coached in Division III before going on to Division I. And they were good coaches in Division III and great coaches. And I feel I could have done the same thing and had just as much success at Division I as those other coaches. I was confident in what I did. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, what if? I could have been the head coach at a couple Division I schools if I wanted to make that move. But, yeah, I don't regret it at all. I wasn't about, you know, going Division I. I had to be a Division I. I didn't have that ego that I had to be a Division I coach. I just wanted to win. And I think I would have taken, you know, my same philosophy and style, you know, and coaching, you know, skills to Division I. I think I would have been successful there too as well. And I don't have that urge to go and coach anymore. I really don't. But, you know, there's been a couple coaches that have reached out, said, okay, now that you're retired, do you want to come and be my assistant at a Division I school? And I'm like, you must be crazy. So that's the last thing I want to do is, you know, now I'll go work, you know, tirelessly traveling around the country for half the money that I was making now. So that's not going to happen.
Final question. You're 31 years total Stockton administration and coaching. What are you most proud of?
I think that I was honest with all of my players during the recruiting process. I think I treated all of the players equally every day at practice, during games. I made sure that I coached all the players. You know, it's easy to coach the great players and coach the starters. And when you're up 3-0 or 4-0 and you bring the subs on the field and you sit back and you joke and you laugh and there's no pressure, you know you're going to win the game and you stop coaching. And I never stopped coaching. I coached the last guy on the bench just as hard as I coached the first team All-American on my team. So, and I was honest with every player during the recruiting process. And parents would ask me or players would ask me, will you guarantee my son a starting job? And I'm like, no, there's no guarantees. And they were like shocked. I'm like, he's going to have to come in here and earn a starting role. I'm going to keep my promises. So I'm not going to promise anybody a starting position unless they come in here and earn it. I said to the one parent one time, I'm like, look, you guarantee me that your son's not going to gain weight? You going to guarantee me that your son's not going to get injured? Can you guarantee me he's not, you know, he's going to get a 3.0? Are you going to guarantee me he's not going to get in trouble? So, well, no. I said, well, then I can't guarantee him that he's going to get a starting position. So I was honest with everybody throughout the recruiting process, honest with them all 4 years, and honest with them as far as coaching goes. Every player that ever played for me, they knew why they started, why they were playing, and they knew why they weren't. There was never any secrets. There was never any player going back to his dorm or going back to his apartment and saying, man, I don't understand why I'm not getting on the field. They all knew. They knew what the expectations were. So that's probably my honesty with the players all the way through from start to finish.
Jeff Haynes, thanks so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this edition of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Jeff Haynes, who just retired after more than three decades as a coach and administrator at Division III Stockton University, for being our guest this week and coming in studio to chat. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.